This is the Pelvic Floor Project, a podcast dedicated to helping you understand how this mysterious group of muscles is part of a bigger puzzle. I'm your host, Melissa DeSalles, a physiotherapist located in Kelowna, BC, Canada, and I'm passionate about proactive healthcare. Through discussion with experts that represent other pieces of the healthcare puzzle, my goal is to help you feel empowered, free of embarrassing symptoms, and in the driver's seat of your pelvic health and wellness journey. Welcome to episode 70. If you haven't already listened to the previous episode, I would really encourage you to do so before diving into this one. In episode 69, fellow physiotherapist Anakin Chadwick and I discuss how trauma affects the nervous system and how this can then trickle down to affect the pelvic floor. Trauma is a lasting emotional response that can result from living through a distressing event. And today, my guest and I are going to dive deeper into birth trauma. Many of you will have heard of my guest today. Tila Tomasetti is a registered provisional psychologist and PhD candidate in Alberta who specializes in the area of birth trauma. After suffering her own birth trauma, Tila decided to start the fast-growing Instagram account called The Tea on Birth Trauma. In this episode, we're going to talk about what birth trauma is, how common it is, symptoms you may be experiencing after the fact, how partners may be affected, and how this all may present itself physically. I asked Tila to elaborate on some of the quotes from her Instagram account like this. We sell people on a Hollywood version of pregnancy and childbirth and then desert them when it doesn't transpire. I don't know who needs to hear this, but mom brain might actually be birth trauma brain. Birth trauma is a whole body tragedy. The six-week checkup is failing birth trauma survivors. And birth trauma is not just about birth, but also the absence of support and understanding. We hope that you not only find this episode helpful, but that you take away that you're normal. Your brain and body are doing the best they can. There is help for you, and you're not alone. If you listen to this episode and it makes you think of someone else, please take the time to share it with them. Now, let me introduce you to a beautiful lady with a super cool name, Tila Tomasetti. All right, Tila Tomasetti. Honestly, I think I can give you the best podcast guest name, Tila. That is, like, what a beautiful name that you have that just sounds so awesome.
I'm already so honored.
So I love to start these episodes by setting the stage, and we're going to be talking today about birth trauma. And I always want really quickly, because this podcast is called The Pelvic Floor Project. And I think some people be like, what the heck? Why are we talking about birth trauma? This is The Pelvic Floor Project. But you have heard me say this number of times before, if you're a listener, that everybody that sees a pelvic health physio has a story. There's always a story. And I quite often say the pelvic floor is stupid, or the pelvic floor doesn't have a mind of its own, or there's always something bigger at play. And I work with a lot of pregnant and postpartum women, and I always like to ask, tell me about your birth. And the way they tell the story just gives me so much information as to some of the things at play when it comes to their symptoms. And so this is absolutely a relevant topic. And just so you know, Tila, the episode that came before you was a discussion with another pelvic health physio about trauma in general and how that comes out in our assessments and our treatments. And so I love that we can kind of hone in now on specifically birth trauma and with someone that's actually like a mental health therapist or mental health professional. And so I'll tell everybody kind of how I know you. I listened to a wonderful episode where you discussed with Dr. Sarah and Alicia, who I also like to partner with. I love the message that they are trying to convey. And I really was interested in getting to know what your mission was. And I know that you spend hours of your time advocating for this language and this conversation to be had. And so I really want to make sure that we showcase all of the wonderful work that you're doing today. So with all that said, before we get into it, will you introduce yourself so that everybody knows who the lovely person behind the wonderful name Tila Tomasetti is?
Well, Melissa, I just feel so special already. Hi, everyone that's listening. As shared, my name's Tila Tomasetti, and I am a registered provisional psychologist in Alberta, Canada. And I am also a doctoral student. I'm actually nearing the end of my coursework. I've got my last few electives to go. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And then I'll be starting my doctoral project soon, and it will be in the area of birth trauma. But before this world that I entered into and that kind of came to me in a variety of different ways, I was a trauma therapist and specialized in domestic violence, sexual assault, childhood sexual abuse, as well as tragic losses. So it's been almost two decades of working with trauma.
And I want to know, so how did you, was it kind of, and I definitely don't want to put you on the spot, but I do know that you've shared a lot about your own personal journey, but did you find that it, because most pelvic health physios make their way to pelvic health physio too, because like, whoa, something's different. I want to learn more about this. And I want to help the next person not go through some of the things that I went through. Will you talk a little bit about your venture into this area then of trauma?
Yeah, so it started about 5 years ago, and I was sitting across the couch from my best friend who had just given birth. And I had went to go visit her. She had just got home from the hospital, and I wanted to meet her daughter and see how she was doing. And so I asked her how the birth went, and she immediately broke down in tears and described to me birth trauma. Described to me an event that had taken place during that where she was left feeling pretty broken and not treated very well by providers. And so I was listening to her story, and I thought to myself, I've never heard this from any of my friends before. And I actually said that out loud. I was thinking out loud, and she said, I think this happens a lot more than people give credit to and speak to. And so after that conversation with her, I looked into like what this all means and discovered this term like birth trauma, and realized that it is something that happens to so many different birthers, and yet nobody wants to talk about it because of a slew of different reasons, like you should only be grateful for your birth and talk about positive things, and that if you don't, then it means that you hate your baby, like kind of just ridiculous myths like that that I talk about and dispel a lot on my page. And so after reading up on this, I reached back out to her and I said, she knew that one day I wanted to do my doctorate. And at that point, I think I was at the beginning of my master's or in the middle of it. And I said to her, you know what, Christina, I said, when I do my doctorate one day, I want to dedicate it to you. I want to figure out this thing called birth trauma and just like open up some space to really talk about it and do some research around it. And then, you know, fast forward for 4 years later, I would, you know, be giving birth to my own daughter and then suffer an excessive postpartum hemorrhage where I lost over half the blood in my body and required blood transfusions and bagged iron and IVs and all kinds of stuff to save my life. And the other layer to that story is midwifery violence that had taken place in my very own home just hours before that excessive hemorrhage. And and then 12 weeks later started the Instagram page at the T on birth trauma, which is where you and I found one another. And and just wanted to create that space where it was very acceptable to have these discussions and where people could feel safe enough to speak to them in a really raw way and not feel like they had to be filtered in some way.
And of course, like as I always say, people think of physios, obviously they associate us with physical issues. And so, you know, quite often they will be experiencing symptoms, whether it be pain, usually it's something around pain, or maybe it's leaking, or it's something doesn't feel right, or I'm nervous to exercise. But No matter what they come in for, I kind of ask the same type of thing you did of your friend. How was the birth? And like I mentioned, I just look at their body language. I look how they tell it. But quite often I even ask the question with air quotes, tell me, was your birth traumatic? And would you consider your birth traumatic? And I often just describe, the reason I put air quotes on is it's very subjective. I mean, some people will describe a birth that to me, I thought, wow, you know, that sounds like it was really hard, but they have the biggest smile on their face. And it really doesn't seem to be something that they're carrying forward. Whereas someone else, describe a story that I think, oh, that sounds like you had a great experience, but there's a lot of tears in their eyes, or they want to keep talking about it. And I always just want to make sure that I validate and listen to them, that, you know, what your experience is your experience. And I do find that quite often people are like, well, this doesn't matter, I'm here for my physio. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm sure that you see this quite often too, whether it be discussion with some of your clients, or maybe you notice this with yourself, that quite often this emotional trauma comes with some physical manifestations.
Oh my goodness, absolutely. And I have to say, Melissa, as somebody who is a provider, but also a birth trauma survivor herself, that it means the world to us to hear providers like you say that you ask that question and that you create the space to talk about it. Because like you just acknowledged, is this like that those who really need to talk about it, they will. And that it's subjective. That's what you're speaking to too, is that what I may think is traumatic, somebody else may not. And so it's so important to let the survivor, that client in front of you, that patient, define their own experience themselves. So create the space first for it to exist, but then just let them allow that definition to come through. I do find that the body and trauma go hand in hand. Like there is no way around this. And so I think that it's so important for pelvic floor physios to understand this world too, because you're going to be, you know, the statistics show that up to 45% are saying that their births were traumatic. So that means that like around half the people that you're seeing have had some kind of experience like that. And when trauma goes unresolved, it just sits in your body and it waits, and it causes all kinds of havoc and, long-term impacts, which I think is often what you may be seeing in those moments where the pain and the trauma has just kind of sat in a place for so long and needs to be healed in one way or another, whether that's through talk therapy or in conjunction with what you do. And so I'm constantly referring to pelvic floor physios. And I'm lucky because where I hold my practice is a place where the founder is a psychologist and the other founder is a pelvic floor physiotherapist. So I'm surrounded by a multidisciplinary team, and I cannot do the work that I do without referring to people like yourself or acupuncture or massage. Like the body has to be heard. It has so much to say.
Yeah. And I think that that's so important to acknowledge. I find at the beginning of the session to be able to help them understand, yes, you're here for your physical symptoms. I understand that's why you came here. But the reason I ask this is because we will be coming back to this, you know, just because I want to show you physically where your symptoms are, show you with the model or help you understand. But I also, we're going to get into, things like habits you have around holding tension or how you breathe or how you sit when you feel pain and what things come to mind. And so I think it's important to be able to acknowledge that as physios, even though sometimes we think it's outside of our scope, like asking those questions is not so outside of our scope. And I thought a nice way to kind of tie in a lot of your messaging and how it relates to what we do as physiotherapists, I spent some time looking at your Instagram feed and pulling out some of the excellent quotes that I see pop up every once in a while. And I thought, if it's okay with you, I'm going to share some of those quotes and then let's just talk a little bit about them so that we can show how, you know, both the emotional and physical symptoms kind of fit together. Sure. And I think what we were talking about first feeds really nicely into this one that I saw. It says, repeat after me. how my nervous system responded because of birth trauma doesn't define me as a parent. So I'm interested to, if you talk a little bit about that, Tila, how does birth trauma affect the brain and the nervous system? And what are you talking about there?
Oh my goodness. I'm going to try not to get too nerdy. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
and I always try and make this really digestible, in regards to like wanting to ensure that people, cause it can get so wordy and jargony and
yep.
then you feel like you have lost people. And then it's just like, I don't know where the starts and ends. So here's kind of like the best way to break it down is that there are three significant parts of our brain that are impacted directly when we've been through trauma. And so what happens is that when we encounter that, our fight, flight, freeze system is ignited. And it flies into form because it wants to protect us in some way. And it does the absolute best that it can. And that's something that I try to remind people all the time, is that your body and your brain, your whole system did the best that it could. But what ends up happening after trauma has come to be and manifested in that moment is that three significant parts of our brain are impacted. And so there's the amygdala. Okay. And there is the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex. And all three of those things, and I won't go into too much detail, take a hit. And so most often what happens is that they shrink as a result. And those are really important things that we need every single day. This is where we hold and maintain memory, as well as like the formation of memory and how we hold that. And so that's why you'll see people with like flashbacks and nightmares and things like that, is because those particular portions of the brain don't know what to do with this information. And so it just kind of runs on a repeat in the brain because it can't make sense of it. And that's where like that part of the prefrontal cortex comes into play too, because that's like our smart brain. So if you have any toddlers at home, that part of the brain has not been developed. That does not actually fully develop in us until we're 25. But that is like our being rational, our ability to communicate, our ability to problem solve. And so all three of those areas take a significant hit. And so that leaves the survivor in a state of just not being able to be themselves in any way that they knew that existed prior to that traumatic event. And so it really impacts how they communicate, how they're able to problem solve as a new parent, how they're able to sleep because of all of these trauma symptoms. And so we're so quick to blame ourselves and be just kind of consumed by guilt and shame as new parents, saying like, I'm failing at this. I don't know what I'm doing. I can, you know, barely hold it together all day. Never mind actually care for this baby. I'm doing, you know, I'm not doing a good job. I'm failing. That's the message I constantly see. And when I break this down and explain, like, you are not failing. Like your body and your brain is specifically responding to what took place, something that was out of your control that you didn't ask for. And now you're doing the best to like parent in pieces. That's what, how I explain it. And so, yeah, like who you are as a parent, like birth trauma doesn't get to define you by that. Like those are your trauma symptoms, but you as a parent are completely separate from that definition.
And so would you, I want to kind of touch on the part where, you know, you say like different parts of the brain are affected, and I'm guessing that's why, or how you describe that it's so subjective, is that there's so many things that play. I'm just kind of guessing here, Tila, so please tell me if anything I'm saying is not accurate, but I'm guessing that things like previous traumas before, just the way that people cope with stress normally, sleep deprivation going into it, like all sorts of things would play a role in what happens that day. Is that right? Like that's why you can't say, oh, that is a traumatic birth and that's not, is that everybody's brain and nervous system is already so individualized and so many factors are always influencing it. Things like the care provider around you, the setting that you're in, all of that influences us so differently. So in that moment, How the birth goes can influence us all very differently. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, when we say to people like you get to define birth trauma, I'm also quick to explain that that doesn't mean we choose it, like that
Right.
it's like our definition of it, so then we're like choosing to have it. But it's like your nervous system actually gives you no choice in that moment. Like your body responded to what was taking place around it. And I agree with you, Melissa, in terms of like how like everybody is built differently, and that our past experiences definitely will influence some of those things. And it just may be that direct moment is what's really truly influencing it, and not necessarily past pieces too. I know there's a lot of research out there that speaks to like if you have been sexually assaulted, you have a higher likelihood of going through birth trauma. I find that kind of research very risky because it can feel blaming. Right? It can be like, oh, because I didn't resolve my sexual assault, then like I did this to myself. So I also think we have to be careful when we tie in past situations that it's not in a blaming way, but in an educational way in terms of being like, this is what happened to your body back then. And then it was layered by life. And then the birth trauma took place and, you know, reignited past trauma symptoms that were buried deep. That is no fault of your own, right? But they were still existing in your body. They weren't resolved, and now they're present again. And so I think, but that's my job, right? Is
Yes.
to have those conversations around like, this is why it's taking place, and none of it is your fault.
And so what about the people that, so let's say some people are listening to this, and they're wondering, well, I don't know if I had birth trauma. Like how do you, again, there's no real diagnosis per se, or black and white answer, but I'm sure you get that question. How do I know if I have birth trauma?
Yeah, I think one of the best, I think if you're asking about it, honestly, that's a pretty good indicator. I have a post that's sitting in my drafts. I have so many that just sit there and they hang out. Something inspires me. And one of them is like, if you are Googling birth trauma right now, it's time to reach out for support. And because that's the reality, we know ourselves best. And so if you're sitting with yourself right now and you're going like, there's just something. There's something about my birth that is not sitting well with me. Then it's worth considering and looking into this even further. And so one of the first things you might want to do is to go on places like Instagram or Facebook or even good old Google to Google like what is birth trauma? What are birth trauma symptoms? And so you would be encountering things like flashbacks, nightmares, shame and guilt, you know, long-term physical impact, short-term physical impacts, as well as like sex and intimacy issues, bonding struggles. Like there is quite a list there, intrusive thoughts, dissociation. And so if these are things that you're like, you know what, since my birth, I've been really struggling, that naming it in that way is, I think, sometimes really helpful and healing to people because then it's a starting point. They start to, you know, repost on Instagram and they're like, oh my goodness, I can really relate to this material. Maybe this is something that I have. And I think that when we as survivors name it ourselves, that's empowering. And, you know, because I think sometimes labels can feel very stigmatizing. And I've found in the work that I do that actually when somebody is able to say, I'm a birth trauma survivor, that that is like a huge break in the silence that exists around it. And that they're like, okay, now what? Right? Like, how do I heal from this? What do I do? How do I feel better?
One of the quotes that you had on Instagram, which kind of you've already touched on this, but I think it points to the fact that it kind of can change who you are or how you feel about yourself. But it says, "I don't know who needs to hear this, but mom brain might actually be birth trauma brain."
Yeah. Oh, mum brain. I really struggle with that term because I think it makes a lot of women feel stupid and feel, yeah, like I'm going to use some difficult language, like idiots and that, and silly and ridiculous. And I think it really minimizes people's experiences because, there is so much struggle in parenthood and motherhood. And I think that when we use language like that, it just minimizes the experience it and just, oh, you've got mom brain, don't worry about it. And it's like, but that mom brain can be so many other things, including like it can be like things like postpartum anxiety or OCD or depression. And a lot of times it's also birth trauma as well. So a lot of those symptoms can overlap one another, like, you know, those scattered moments or struggling to remember, lapse in time, fog, memory gaps, like those are all things that trauma does to the brain too. And so I think when we're around people, instead of dismissing it to like, oh, you just have mom brain, like that's what's happening for you, I like to use curiosity in those moments to be like, tell me more about that. Like, that sounds like it's really hard. And like, yeah, like, what else do you need to say about that? Instead of just, I think those terms kind of just shut people down.
Well, and I think about, because you're right, I think it's easy to say like mom brain or menopause brain or what have you, but sometimes it's kind of preoccupied brain, right? And like you said, you were mentioning that sometimes our brain perseverates on things that are unresolved. And I think one of the reasons I'm bringing this up is because I'm seeing, well, I'm curious to know, well, there's so many factors here. You mentioned that you know, the percentage of people that experience birth trauma. And I'm curious to know, are there no numbers going up? And I know there's so many factors because sometimes maybe we're just talking about it more and we're asking more. Because, and we're living in a time of, we're just coming out of this global pandemic and everything feels weird and we're basically headed into a recession and that is stressful. But I'll be honest with you, I'm noticing the pulse on the pregnant and postpartum women is a lot more overwhelm. And that's what I'm feeling from my clients, is just a different feel of more having a hard time finding time for themselves. I know that's always hard, but even more so, I just can't possibly get 2 minutes to myself, or I can't possibly prioritize healing myself. Didn't you hear I have this new baby? And I'm wondering, are you finding that kind of trend too? Is that, you know, and we're labeling it mom brain and everything, but, you know, are people having a hard time after birth? And is that what I'm seeing?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that, because you're speaking to Melissa, that since the pandemic, you're noticing that more. Is that what you're saying?
The pandemic. And I think just to the pandemic, and I don't know if it's just, our healthcare system is busy too. And I do find a lot of, you know, whether it be that I felt rushed in the hospital, or I feel like there's the hospital short on staff. And I think that I'm hearing more stories that sound like birth trauma.
Yeah.
To be honest, I am.
Yeah,
I'm hearing more stories that sound like birth trauma. And does that coincide with people that are having a hard time prioritizing themselves after? Like, is this a preoccupation? Is this the brain having a hard time, yeah, being able to prioritize recovery because it's perseverating on a trauma? And am I seeing that, or?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think that there's so many factors that are at play that are just like compounding and like resulting in this collapse that you might be speaking to or seeing. And I think that there's so many systems that are at play where there was never enough support to begin with. And now we're really seeing the gaps within those systems. And I think that the isolation piece around COVID really brought that to the forefront, because I think that motherhood has always been kind of a place of secrecy and where we keep a lot of these struggles to ourselves. But then we were really forced to keep them to ourselves once we were in that pandemic and had nobody around us, and no supports to lean on. And so I think that a lot of women reached a breaking point, and no kidding. I'm a COVID mom.
Mm.
And it was, I don't know anything else because that I'm a first time mom. But I could see as a psychologist, as it was unfolding within me as a COVID mom, being like, this is not good. Like, this is because, birth trauma, it truly grows off of isolation. And so, like, hello, that's exactly what the pandemic was, is that it isolated everybody. And so how birth trauma really maintains is through that isolation. And so pandemic allowed those trauma symptoms to just grow and fester and become stronger than maybe they ever were before a pandemic. It definitely, yeah, I think is playing into what you're seeing right now.
One of the quotes you had on your page, we sell people on a Hollywood version of pregnancy and childbirth and then desert them when it doesn't transpire.
Yep. Oh man. Right now I have the privilege and the honor. I've been asked to write a chapter on birth trauma in a book, and it's actually how I start that chapter out. I explain how we are just sold this image, this idea, this concept from a just a really young age as women, around like the perfect birth and what that looks like and who surrounds us and how we look and how we feel, and just like it's so magical and it's like this happily ever after. And it's like, first of all, it's not an ending, it's a beginning, that birth. And when we're sold this idea of like, here's the perfect birth, and like we hear, so many misconceptions around like that it's vaginal, right? That's a natural birth. Oh my goodness, that language drives me nuts. It really does, because it's like, so what, it's an unnatural like birth? Like, it's like, so what does that mean? Did you give birth to an alien then? Like, by stating that kind of language. But it's just like, and the breast is best, and like all of these messages that we get. And it's like, but that is not the reality for birth trauma survivors. First of all, it's usually emergency situations or things like, yeah, C-sections or hemorrhages or babies in the NICU, and like all of these unforeseen circumstances. And as well as breastfeeding not being the reality for so many survivors as well, because their body was working really hard to save their lives and get them back on track after going through trauma, that the last thing on its mind was producing milk. Like, that's one of the things that I even encountered as a survivor, who almost lost their life with a hemorrhage. And so I think that we sell it, we set them up. We don't talk about the realities that can take place, that things can go wrong and that they do go wrong. And then they're left just wondering what they did, like blaming themselves. And then society jumps on that too, being like, well, maybe you should have come up with a better birth plan, or maybe you should have done this or that. Or so I just feel like we absolutely desert these mothers when they need us the most. And that so many of the symptoms I think that exist afterwards can be avoided if we stop with these myths, if we stop selling this Hollywood version.
I did an episode with another PhD candidate a while ago. I can't even remember the number off the top of my head, but she was doing she was also in the field of psychology, and she was her paper was all about how if we prepare people for vaginal birth or for the what the pelvic floor is going to go through, we see better outcomes physically and mentally. And in that conversation, her and I talked about, I said to her, I struggle with this somehow because the last thing I want is for someone to come to me feeling so excited about their upcoming birth and yeah, really, really immersing themselves in the positivity. And I don't want to be like, well, just so you know, this is going to be rough after. And I do struggle with that sometimes, you know, just like you don't want to be that parent that says you have a good sleeping kid right now, just wait. So sometimes I welcome your thoughts and your suggestions on that because there are other physios listening to this too. Any ideas about how we can help make people feel a bit more prepared for that? Because I definitely don't want to be that womp womp person, but I see it all the time. The people that go in with their eyes wide open always, well, not always, but I do find generally they come out kind of like, okay, I was expecting the worst. Anything else kind of feels good. I got this. I was prepared for this. Do you have any other suggestions for people listening? How do we do that then as care providers without being the negative Nancy?
I know. You know, I think it's a question I'm still really trying to work on right now myself, because I think there's a fine line sometimes between, like, we never want to scare people in these moments. We want to prepare. We want to educate. It's empowering to have all of that knowledge under our belt when we walk into situations. And so I think just like gently having the conversation where it's like, okay, so like if you were going through a vaginal birth, you know, this is what might be taking place for your pelvic floor. You know, if in the end a C-section is what is necessary, this is what's happening, right? So see how I did that? It's just like, here are some options for you. This is what the body might be going through or encountering in these moments. This is how it will be impacted as a result. And so see how there I wasn't like, okay, an emergency C-section might take place. You might almost lose your life, right? Like, we don't have to get into like the scary details of it, but why not mention things other than a vaginal birth? Because our pelvic floor, you know this, I know this, and I'm not even a physiotherapist, is involved in C-sections as well. Like, a lot of women are pushing before it gets to that place of the C-section. And then on top of it, you've been using those muscles, they've been expanding and working hard, and then they're cut into hours later, seven layers of skin and tissue. So it's like, these are like, I don't know, I just think that we can find ways that work for us that feel good in our mouth and our tongues as they're falling out. So I never give like direct advice around that, but that was like my example of being like, okay, like if this happens, this is what's happening. If this happens, but it's like, let's not just talk about vaginal births.
Yeah, I hear you. And another quote from your page: birth trauma is not just about the birth, but also the absence of support and understanding. So I think those two kind of go together, is that quite often people just kind of feel, well, geez, I wasn't really prepared for this, right?
Yeah. And not only prepared, it's like, you know, there was a quote I read when I first started doing my doctor, actually before that, when I started really delving into the research with birth trauma, and it said that 66% of birth trauma survivors state that at the root of their birth trauma is the treatment or mistreatment by a provider. And so that's really what that quote that you just read is speaking to, is that it's so, and it goes back to us like kind of defining birth trauma and how you might see differently from me, is that like, so often what people are speaking to is the way that they were made to feel, that it's not necessary. Like, it's, I almost died. That's not my birth trauma. That's not, that part actually I rarely think about. It's not something that's on my mind. What's on my mind, and that I'm still battling 19 months later, is the midwifery violence in my home, is the way that I was made to feel, and the abuse and the neglect that took place there. And so it's that absence of support and understanding and warmth and compassion and trauma-informed care that can really produce these trauma symptoms for people, because they don't feel safe. And that's where we breed trauma, is unsafety.
I can kind of echo that, in that I would say in a lot of ways my birth was on paper traumatic, but I think about what you said, and I felt very supported from everybody around me. So I don't really, when I think about it, yeah, that was a traumatic event, but yeah, I actually just have very positive memories about it. But there's research showing that birth satisfaction is highest dependent on our provider. And isn't that just speak to kind of feeling safe and secure? This is why I quite often say, when people say, when should I reach out to you after? I say, let's make a connection before you have your baby, because then I can talk to you about these really mysterious changes that are happening in your body, help you understand. what is going to happen in birth, whether you have a vaginal birth or a C-section. Let me just tell you what's going to happen to your tissues, because sometimes this mysterious area is hard to understand, and then your mind will get the better of you and make up all sorts of stories. But let me help you understand what is going to go on and all the normal things that are not very glamorous that will happen after. Like I always say, you're going to have a hard time controlling your pee. You're going to have to wear a diaper sometimes. You might not be able to hold your poo. You might feel like something's falling out the bottom. That is all normal. And then I find that they're much more likely to reach out to me early after with the questions, instead of just sitting at home waiting for someone to tell them, because we've made a relationship in pregnancy. And so there's that trust factor. And I think it's same thing, coming down to, you know, the actual birth is who's around you helping you feel safe. And I think you hear the saying all the time, create your village, but what does that mean? You know, I think sometimes it's kind of what does that actually mean? But I think that's what you're saying, is find people around you that help you feel supported for all these unknown things that are coming, right? Because we can't predict everything.
Yeah, no, we can't. And this conversation just makes me want to cheer, like it does listening to you say it, because that's trauma-informed care.
Yeah,
exactly what you just described doing. Is like preparing people, doing it in really loving, gentle ways, and letting them know things before they even take place, and that you're there for them afterwards. Like this, that's amazing work that you're doing, Melissa. And it reminds me of my own pelvic floor physiotherapist. I'm going to shout her out. It's Callie. She works for Pine Integrated Health. I started working with her before I gave birth, and she's been a support to me then and after. And it made a difference. It did. I knew that Callie had my back and that she loved me in her own way, right? As we do as providers for the people that we work with. And I just knew that she was one of my safe people after that all took place. And and that she would be there for me in whatever way that I needed her to be. And so you are all doing such important work, and like I can't stress that enough. So I hope for those physiotherapists who never really connected the two quite yet will really see this after this episode, is that like you can make a world of a difference in the healing and the trauma-informed care that survivors get.
What about the quote on your page, the 6-week checkup is failing birth trauma survivors?
What do you want to know? I've got a lot to say on that one.
I agree. There's this magical, okay, 6 weeks are good. And then if you're not good, then what am I bad? I think that 6-week checkup, I try to talk a lot about this too, just in that, why are we waiting 6 weeks to get guidance about our body or anything like that? 6 weeks is such just an arbitrary number. Same as after you have a knee surgery, let's follow up at 6 weeks. That doesn't mean that 6 weeks is the only time we're going to talk about your knee. Can you talk a little bit about maybe what you meant or what you were trying to shed light on when you posted that quote?
I think that the support needs to exist in first and foremost, the space in which the birth took place. So before that parent, those parents, that family leaves the hospital or, you know, walks the midwives out, if it was a home birth, whatever that might be, is that support needs to exist right then and there. So I think just gentle recognition of what those people went through. And so the support needs to start right after and not be waiting 6 weeks. And here's the danger too about the 6-week piece, is that it needs to be like at 9 weeks then, and 12 weeks and like a period of time after, not like a year after, which is very typical in postpartum care. It's like 6 weeks and then, oh, I'll see you next year. And it's like, but for some birth trauma survivors is that they may not even be able to recognize that this has been their experience at 6 weeks, because they're in the fog of trauma. And so they aren't able to put together the pieces at that time because of what's happening in the body and the brain. And I also want to acknowledge that a huge population within the birth trauma community is the NICU community. So those parents, oh my goodness, they trauma. Are you kidding? They're only focused on the trauma of their child. And so they haven't given any consideration to themselves. So we are really doing a disservice to the NICU community at 6 weeks, because chances are they might still be in the hospital or just having been released. And so they're still on autopilot in that trauma response mode of fight, which is survival for their little one, and ensuring that. And so at 6 weeks, we will miss that community and the birth trauma symptoms they might be encountering. So I think it's so important to follow families way longer than we do, and ask questions and get curious and just create the space to have these really tough conversations.
One thing I wanted to touch on as we start to think about closing this off is partner trauma. And because I think that my husband, even I described my story and how I don't think of it as a traumatic experience, or I don't have a traumatic feeling. I think actually I haven't talked to him too much about this, but I think that he would describe it as a traumatic, like a trauma for him. I think that he was able to see it from the outside looking in a little bit more than I was. And so I bet you he had more trauma than I did around that situation. And how often does that come up? And I bet you a lot of partners don't feel comfortable voicing that because they think, well, I don't deserve to feel this way because I did not go through that physically. So how much of your practice looks at that or acknowledges that, Tila?
A big part. And I think it's because of my own experience, if I'm being honest. I think that a lot of people who work with birth trauma are totally missing the partner. And it's always at the forefront of my brain because of what my own partner went through and his ability to communicate with me around that. And I'm lucky because, again, like, you know, I'm going to go stereotypical here because there's so much truth to it, is that men are not always great at communicating feelings. And the reason for that is because society has denied them the space to do it. And so that's who we need to blame in those moments, is not the man who's struggling to communicate, but the society who just said, oh, we don't do that here. We don't talk about our feelings. And so, you know, in thinking back to the 6 week chat we just had, is that at that 6 week checkup, which actually came at around 4 weeks for me, because of circumstances with my doctor, she was incredible. Like, she really was. She was hugely supportive, really sat with me in my pain, listened to my story, expressed concern, all of those things. But what she missed was him. And he sat there that whole time listening, you know, with tears in his own eyes, because I could see them. And not once was he acknowledged. And it's like, but he witnessed that. He was the person who, you know, again, like, sorry to be graphic, but birth trauma is, who saw the blood everywhere. I didn't, right? I wasn't down there. He was. He was the one whose face I saw and realized that things were really not going well for me. You know, he went sheet white. And, like, you know, so I just think that we're abandoning a lot of dads. We are, and we're expecting them to suck it up and keep going. And, like, yeah, you didn't give birth and it wasn't your body. And it's just like, yeah, but they love us and they care for us and they support us. And, you know, he was pretty convinced in that moment he was about to lose his wife. And so there he was trying to struggle with the happiness and the joy of seeing his daughter in that mother's arms, and then going, am I about to lose my wife, my best friend? And so I just think we need to be talking about it more. I think there's, like, I don't think, I know there's only a handful of research papers on it. And so that's one of the goals that I have with the research that I'm going to be doing, is to open up that dialogue and really create that space, because the whole family is impacted by birth trauma. No one comes out of that untouched. And yeah, the whole family unit really matters.
Well, I think, like, I always think it's so amazing when someone or a family or can take something that happened to them and turn it into something good for people behind them. So I think I know it's not easy, but, yeah, I thank you for taking all this time and dedicating so much of your hours and your PhD to helping the people that are still to come. Yeah.
Thank you. I feel honored to do this work. You know, these are the people who are raising the next generation. And so I say it all the time is that I'm here for the parent. We always have a ton of people for the baby. I'm here to hold the mom. I'm here to hold the dad and just let them know that they're not alone in this experience and that they can heal from it too.
I think it's important. And if I was to think about like some of the things that I think about in summarizing this are that there's always so many things that we can list that we need to do better as a society or as a healthcare system. But I do think we have to do the best to figure out who we are as individuals too, the best we can in where we are in our lives to help, because we're all individuals. And I think sometimes we have to make sure that we advocate for ourselves and that we recognize our needs the best we can, whether that be through conversation with our partners or our family, because I think sometimes we put a lot on our providers to expect to know what we want or to expect to know what makes us tick. And I think that that's hard as a care provider sometimes, to know you can't assume paint everyone with the same brush, right? So I do think that sometimes there needs to be some thinking in pregnancy, what, you know, around the birth plan, like what does make me tick? What do I need in a relationship with my care provider to be able to be an advocate for ourselves and to like you said, build that team around you that helps you feel supported, because the physio that makes you feel supported might not be the right fit for somebody else either. Right. And I think that that's important for us to acknowledge our differences. I also think that what you're saying is afterwards, it's important to validate or acknowledge to anyone who is experiencing any type of what you would deem birth trauma, you're normal. Your nervous system responded very appropriately to what it was given. And you might be having some long-standing or some symptoms, whether they be emotional or physical, that are lingering, but our nervous system can change again. And there are things that you can do, whether it be working with a mental health therapist, a physical health therapist, or both. But again, acknowledging kind of what you need, that the nervous system is changeable. And I think too, that how do you, I guess a question and a comment is that it sounds like what we need to do is be able to move past the trauma, you know, whether it be through talking or acknowledging. But this is always a sticky point. Like you said, lots of times people are nervous to share that story because of the comments they get after, like, oh, well, you should just be grateful. But maybe you need to pick and choose who you share your story with, right? Because if it is a story that you don't want that pregnant friend to be nervous about, maybe you just pick and choose who you share your story with.
Yeah.
Right. But it's natural to need to process or move past that, move through that.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we don't know, who our safe people are until we're in a traumatic, you know, time of our lives. Like sometimes I can think of the people who at the start of that journey I thought were my safe people and then turned out not to be well equipped to get the job done in terms of being my support system. So I think sometimes we can go into it thinking we know, and then that changes depending on what we need as a result of going through that experience and what they're capable of giving us. And that just remember that if that person is struggling to give you what you need, it's not a reflection of you. It's not that you are too difficult or your issue is too big or there's something wrong with you. It's just, you know, that they lack certain skills or abilities or qualities to kind of support you in the way that you need. But that there are so many people out there that are capable of doing that. And I think that's sometimes when we really do need to seek out the providers. Like you said, whether it's psychology or the body, I say both. Both are so important. Let's bring them together, because I think, you know, I specialize in EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. And so it's all about, you know, the brain and the body coming together in order to heal trauma. And in my opinion, you can't heal trauma without tending to both.
Any other points of summary that you want to share, Tila?
I just think, you know, again, given the podcast that I'm on today, I think the point that I will make is that pelvic floor physiotherapists are very important. And I say that not to put pressure or a sense of expectation on you. I just think sometimes we don't tell our providers that enough, that the work they do is so incredible and impactful. And that, again, just by being warm and compassionate and creating space before actually doing your job, which is so meaningful, you are really helping the person across from you. And just know that us survivors are so grateful to you, because our bodies feel really unsafe after trauma. And so when somebody like yourselves is touching or interacting with them and doing it with such warmth and again compassion, that is where some healing can start. So thank you for that, to all those therapists who are doing such great work.
Yeah. And I think it's, I can't say enough, just like, to pick someone to work with that I always say that, you know, like, and trust, because just like you choose your friends wisely, choose your therapist wisely, because, and if you do have an experience that just doesn't sit right, try someone else.
Yeah.
Because there's no two therapists the same. And, it's an important area to feel safe in.
Definitely.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. And again, everything you're doing, I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Will you tell everybody, just in summary again, where to find you? Where do you want people to look for you?
So first and foremost is at my Instagram, which is the tea. So think of the tea that we drink, the tea on birth trauma. And so if you have clients, patients that need support, I say send them there. And I say that because it's a free resource, and who doesn't want that? And it's such a sense of community and just a coming together. That sense of common humanity is really clear on my page, and just survivors wanting to support each other through healing. As well as Psychology Today, you can find me on there, or you can look for me at my website, which is www.thetonbirthtrauma.com. And my private practice is based out of the Pine Integrated Health. So I was like collapsing under my words there. They'd be like, Tila. Pine Integrated Health Center. There's two locations. There's one in Edmonton and one in Sherwood Park. But I can see any birth trauma survivor across Alberta. So yeah, just, and I am a very, my virtual door is always open. So to anybody listening who has questions about this for me, or just wanted to share their story, just know that it's always open and I'm here for you.
And that's a wrap. If you enjoyed this show, would you pretty please, with a cherry on top, review, rate, and share this podcast, as it helps with gaining exposure. For more information on how to work with me, visit my website, mommyberries.com. I'll see you next time.